In terms of reaching net zero by 2050, we're sort of on target at the moment, but we're quite clearly going to go off target quite soon unless you do a lot more.
Hello and welcome to the Green Alliance podcast. We're the charity and think tank that is all about achieving ambitious leadership for the environment. I'm Sam Alvis, head of the Green Renewal Programme at Green Alliance. A simple question for this week's podcast. Are we on track for net zero? The UK has reduced emissions at the fastest rate in the world over the past decade. They're now 45% lower than they were in 1990, which is ahead of 21% reductions in the US and 24% in the EU. Much of this fall has been driven by the energy sector, and especially the phase-out of coal power. But the success of the switch to renewables, which has been much faster than many expected, is covering for a lack of progress in more difficult sectors like transport, buildings, land use, or agriculture. Half of our emissions now come from just these four sectors. The government's new nationally determined contribution, that's our emissions reduction promise for the Glasgow Climate Summit, is for a 68% fall by 2030 from 1990 levels. Based on current policies, Green Alliance's new net zero policy tracker shows that our emissions will be 40% higher than needed to hit this 2030 target. You can dig into a bit more of the detail in the policy tracker, which you can find in the show notes. Meeting our target and getting to net zero then requires serious heavy lifting, and soon. Importantly, it means doubling our annual spend on net zero from 21 to 43 billion. Not only that, policy change in these sectors is much more visible to voters and their everyday lives than swapping the source of their power. Well-designed, well-communicated policy, ensuring that it's in the public's interests, is therefore going to be vital. Without sufficient action, the UK is going to suffer on two fronts. We'll fail to tie decarbonisation policies to the COVID recovery, missing opportunities in job creation and green growth. And it'll also undermine our climate diplomacy for Glasgow if we're failing to meet our own nationally determined contribution. So how then do we get on track? And is all of government aware of the scale of action required to do so? Is government even feeling the political pressure, either domestically or internationally, to upgrade its plans? To find out what's coming, I spoke to somebody at the heart of political pressure in Westminster.
I'm Anthony Brown. I am the MP for South Cambridgeshire, and I'm chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on the Environment. I was a journalist for about 20 years, including stints as the environment editor of the Observer newspaper and of the Times newspaper.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Anthony. You were elected in 2019 and already chair of the APPG on environment, as you say. I'm interested in what drew you to climate policy in your first term and whether you think the 2019 intake differed from previous years when it comes to net zero policy.
Well, I've had a lifelong interest in environment issues, and I grew up in the countryside of South Cambridgeshire, where I'm now the MP. I actually also happen to be half Norwegian, and so I used to spend my summers in the Norwegian wilderness, which made me feel very close to nature. And as it happens, I'm married to a Canadian and spent a lot of time out in the forests in Canada. Being elected as an MP, it was quite natural for me to then put those interests to use to promote debate and awareness and understanding of environmental issues, both within Parliament and in the broader sort of Westminster environment and different stakeholders. And I'm very glad that the Green Alliance has stepped up to the plate and taken over the secretariating of the APPG. You asked about the 2019 intake. I've actually been rather pleasantly surprised how interested so many of them are in environmental issues, certainly amongst those I know best, with the conservative side of it. And it is very genuine. And I wasn't expecting that much, actually. I was a bit more sort of cynical, but people genuinely are interested. One of the good things, reassuring things, that issues like climate change now, there is no party division on it. There might be on very particular granular policies, but you know, we all know we have to reach this target of net zero by 2050. I know there's been some debate, different people want the target by a different date, but basically you look at Labour, SNP, the Liberal Democrats, Conservatives, we're all aligned with the same objective here. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy to reach it, obviously, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, but at least we're all rowing in the same direction. There's not that many policy areas where you can say there's such an alignment of sort of political ambition and political will.
Yeah, I think that's right. And certainly at Green Alliance, we're working hard to make sure that we work across party. Hopefully in a future episode, we can pick your views on sort of Canadian and Norwegian climate process in the run-up to COP as well. That sounds really interesting.
Norway's a good country to sort of aim to follow in certain ways, but it's not easy for other countries to do it. We don't have their advantages.
No, exactly. And also lots to dig into with the North Sea and how we go about with new licenses and things like that, and speaking to Norwegians. But let's stick to the UK for now. So you mentioned the 2019 intake are much more environmentally friendly than you were hoping. So, and that's fantastic to hear. Do you think that's helping give government the space to be more ambitious on net zero? Are things going well? How are we getting on track for net zero?
So there is no opposition within the Conservative Party against the government's ambition and indeed statutory duty to reach net zero by 2050. I mean, I haven't come across a single MP who's spoken out against it
Brilliant.
or pushed back against it. So from that point of view, it's very easy, politically easy for the government to come up with policies in that direction. And there's obviously a lot to do, and there'll obviously be certain resistance in certain policies. So, for example, the fuel duty escalator for petrol and diesel, the government decided to freeze it again this year, and that is because there is a lot of opposition in certain rural constituencies. There's been no opposition to banning the sale of petrol and diesel cars by 2030. I just don't think that would have been the case maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago, when there was a lot more sort of skepticism about.
No, that's really encouraging. And I think you're right. Certainly, the top level arguments are really there. One of the things that we're thinking about is we're now moving from a stage where of setting targets, and perhaps things like cutting emissions in energy, which doesn't really affect voters or their everyday lives, and moving on to sort of meatier things. So you mentioned the fuel duty that has a real impact. So where is the Conservative Party at on pushing on those specific things when it meets the voters?
You asked how we're doing, and I'll answer that, and then sort of come to the point you're making now. So, I mean, by and large, the UK has got a good track record on climate change so far, just if you look at the emissions per capita. And I know that people don't often put that at the top of press releases, but you compare it to other G7 countries, and we have done well. And there's obviously lots of reasons for that, and there's lots of debates about it's consumption-based emissions rather than production-based emissions. And even when you factor that in, we've still got a pretty good track record. But it And certainly compared to like Germany, where emissions per capita are lower now, and we're one third of the level of America and Canada, and so we have done well. But we've done well largely because the easiest things have been done so far, and as you mentioned, it's in power generation in particular is the most notable one. And when I was environment editor of the Observer and the Times 20 years ago, renewable was just a few percentage of the total energy production, electricity production in the UK. And although I massively supported it, I always saw it as slightly pie in the sky, the idea that anytime soon we're going to be majority renewable. But actually, most of our electricity now does come from renewable resources, as you know, is it? From wind power and solar and coal. I never thought in my lifetime I'd see coal power generation phased out, but that's happening in the next couple of years. In terms of reaching net zero by 2050, we're sort of on target at the moment, but we're quite clearly going to go off target quite soon unless you do a lot more. And certainly the ambition of being reducing emissions by 68% by 2030, we need to do a lot more for that. So there is absolutely no room for complacency. Even though we've done relatively well over the last 30 years, we absolutely have to keep pushing forwards, otherwise we'll end up going backwards. And the next 30 years are going to be a lot more difficult than the last 30 years, because it will impact people's voters' personal lives in a way that previous changes haven't. So things like, and one of the big unsolved areas is domestic heating. There's no pain-free solution to this. There's nothing that doesn't cost a lot of money, that doesn't involve people making a lot of changes to their houses and their homes.
Those points you put out are really, really interesting. And speaking about the individual ministers you've spoken to who are across this are deeply engaged. I'm interested in whether you think there's certain parts of government that aren't as engaged on the homes and decarbonisation side, whether it's MHCLG, whether it's DIT. I think BEIS certainly are really ahead, really get some of this stuff. Where do you think we need to pull a little bit harder, and which government ministries in particular do you think we should be engaging with?
Well, I mean, the Treasury clearly has a critical role to play, but they have got a big program to get to net zero by 2050, and
Yeah,
they've
the net zero review.
the net zero review, which I think Sajid Javid launched, and that's still ongoing at the moment, and we look forward to the results of that. And we definitely need to have that, because you won't get the coherence across government policy unless you've got the Treasury aligned with every single bit of it, because they decide the spending and they decide the taxation, and both of those are critical. You can't let other departments do it on their own. So and I think the Treasury has stepped up to the plate compared to a year ago or 5 years ago.
Treasury is a bit of a weird ministry because, unlike other countries, we obviously combine our holding the purse strings and setting economic policy in one department. And we seem to have brought net zero very well into our economic policy, so things like the Green Finance or the Bank of England's new mandate. But I think potentially it's on the former, the purse strings and the spending, that we're not quite there. Do you see that as a fair assessment?
Well, I mean, the last year has been a real shock to the entire country because of the whole coronavirus pandemic. And the Treasury has been at the centre of sorting that out and has spent something like £400 billion dealing with the consequence of it. So I think you've got to cut them a little bit of slack that they've been they've been at the forefront of making sure that the deepest recession we've had for 300 years causes as little long-term economic damage as possible. And I think they've done generally a good job. But, you know, as we come out of this pandemic, then, you know, clearly they'll need to focus more on the tax and spending side as far as the net zero goes. And we, as I say, we look forward to the publishing of the net zero review. But they have done things. You mentioned the net zero environmental mandate for the Bank of England and the Monetary Policy Committee. That's very much welcome. I know the green bonds that have green gilts that they've launched again. That's, you know, helpful and you know, it's all pushing in the right direction. And then there's making mandatory the reporting of climate-related financial disclosures for companies. That is coming in, and that's Treasury-led, and I think that will make quite a big difference in the behaviour of companies. So it has been doing quite a lot already. And you look at the spending, things like the Green Homes Grant, yes, there are lessons to be learnt, but actually the Treasury did put the money aside for it. I don't think that, you know, the Treasury, it wasn't due to a lack of willingness from the Treasury that it didn't quite unfold as we'd hoped.
A lot of us are looking forward to that net zero review, and hopefully it'll be published soon. I mean, one of the concerns I think from the sector is that in waiting for the net zero review, potentially we're missing a few opportunities now as we come out of COVID and targeting the recovery spending to do decarbonisation at the same time, so that we're not necessarily having to spend twice, once on the recovery and once after. The one example I come to is in the budget, we have this fantastic new policy on the super deduction to help businesses grow their investment. But the Treasury explicitly ruled out that that would have any green strings attached. And do you think potentially we're missing the opportunity in getting on track for the next carbon budget?
I mean, we do need to build back better, clearly, and any low-hanging fruit, as it were, that where we can build back in a certain direction, which is greener, we should take advantage of it. But I wouldn't confuse too much two different things. I mean, reaching net zero by 2050 is a 30-year program, obviously, and the whole country needs to pull together in that direction. And making sure that the steepest recession we've had in 300 years doesn't in the next year lead to, you know, far greater unemployment than need otherwise be the case is a particular short-term target. And it's absolutely right, the Treasury does everything it can to make sure the economy bounces back quickly in the next 12 months, 24 months, to make sure there aren't hundreds of thousands of people out of work who otherwise wouldn't need to be out of work.
Yeah, indeed. I think it's more the concern that in making short-term decisions to drive the recovery, which you're absolutely sort of priorities in jobs and boosting the economy is right, but we don't want to be locking in things that are going to cause businesses problems down the line. So if they're using that for sort of high carbon infrastructure that is potentially in 10 years, in 5 years' time, going to be made sort of illegal or not part of the UK's green economy. Is that just layering on problems for businesses when they're already struggling with sort of short-term liquidity issues?
Yeah, I mean, the super deduction, it's a short-term stimulus. I mean, it's a big stimulus, but it's a short-term thing. And, you know, maybe you'll get the impact you say, but it's, I mean, the government are, look, they have been very open to looking at other things. So one of the other big complaints has been talking about investment in fossil fuel infrastructure is the export guarantee scheme, where the government was basically helping fossil fuel infrastructure developments in other countries. And that has now put a stop to that. And I know it was a long running complaint, no doubt, from the Green Alliance and other environment groups that we were being contradictory between our policy at home and our policy overseas. And the government did listen and it has changed that. And that is very welcome.
How do you think we can go about bringing that coherence, or maybe being better at looking at policy in the round? What's the governance arrangements we need to be able to ensure that everything's pushing towards net zero?
Well, ultimately, net zero is something that affects every single government department. Some departments are more central to the campaign to get net zero than others. And you talked about the Treasury, but also BEIS and DEFRA are probably the key ones. It is ultimately the Prime Minister who's in charge. And so that's why there needs to be a sort of national coherent push for that. And he clearly is committed to it, but that doesn't mean you get every government decision aligned with net zero instantly, and nor does it mean actually that there aren't sometimes some areas where you might do things you wouldn't do strictly from an environmental reason because there are other objectives there. And that's why I say you need to look at the policies in the round.
That makes a lot of sense. There's a couple of really interesting points to pick up there. But sticking on the Prime Minister and his leadership, particularly with the 10-point plan. So sometime later in the year, we're hoping for a bit of an update or a state of progress on the 10-point plan. Which ministers do you think he perhaps needs to give a little bit of a prod, or departments to say, we're doing well here, but we could perhaps have a little bit more effort in other places?
The areas where we need to make most progress are domestic heating, which we talked about. Transport, we have a minister for Rachel McLean for decarbonisation of transport, and I know she's very committed to that, but there are lots of difficult problems here. I mean, the most extreme is probably aviation, and where there isn't really as technology currently stands, there isn't an environmentally friendly way to fly. And then things like agriculture, where it's not the biggest emitter, but there hasn't been as much progress on agriculture becoming net zero as one might have hoped. And that is obviously there the government has introduced, it's got scrapped the common agricultural policy that we had from the EU and replaced it with the environmental land management scheme.
Certainly, and actually you've basically picked the top three from our policy tracker, which is fantastic. So things like, indeed, a more ambitious ELMS is certainly up there, and a viable transport decarbonisation plan. I think we've sort of, at least in the interim, looking at how we're not amplifying demand for things like bigger airports, and it's helpful to see that recent ones have recent expansions have been called in. Just finally on the competing priorities then, obviously government's was elected and one of its huge ambitions was to level up parts of the country. And I know for the 2019 intake in particular, it's been really core to many of their agendas. Do you see any conflict or complementarity between the government's objectives to level up and net zero?
I don't see that there needs to be any conflict between it. And indeed, there are certainly quite a lot of arguments that actually levelling up is compatible with net zero. Or there are So if you look at some of the green investments, they can be particularly helpful for the North of England. So to pick one thing that we haven't mentioned yet, carbon capture and storage. And I know there's conflicting views about that, and it clearly needs to be absolutely robust in the sense of it can't be a scam, as it were. And it's obviously completely pointless if you're not actually capturing carbon and you aren't storing it permanently. But if it does work, and it's obviously it needs to be commercialized as a technology, but if it works and is robust, then I think it should be welcomed. But a lot of the infrastructure for it and a lot of the projects for it that are being supported by the government are in the north of England, and that's just a result of the fact that that's where the skill sets are, largely because of the oil and gas industry. Clearly what you don't want to do is say the north of England there is a lot more heavy industry and say, right, we're not going to tackle heavy industry steel production, say, because actually that will damage the north of England. What you have to do is look at ways where we get steel industry, which is one of the most difficult nuts to crack, to become more carbon neutral, and that's a priority of government, and then you're actually helping the north of England where the steel industry is. So I think it's really about the approach that you take and how you actually manage that transition, and there's no reason why you can't level up and go green at the same time.
You hit the nail on the head with green steel in that it's a real opportunity for almost the future shape of the UK economy. If we can crack green steel and have those high-skilled jobs, we can certainly be a world leader in exports.
I've become more and more convinced that there definitely are first-mover advantages here, and partly that is because the rest of the world is now moving in that direction. And environmental arguments aside, just from a purely economic point of view, if we were making huge changes and costly changes for ourselves to become net zero where the rest of the world wasn't doing anything, then it probably wouldn't be economically advantageous to us. But the fact the whole world is moving that direction, and it's great that the US is back on board with net zero as a objective, and China is now, which is, I never thought I'd say for a long time, it means that actually if we get ahead on these technologies, there are huge export opportunities there and skills that will be in huge demand globally.
Yeah, that's especially with China recently announcing a whole string of measures for its steel industry in particular. I think that sense of impending competition, that's where the first mover advantage starts to help, right? When you know somebody else might get there first, but if we can, that would be fantastic. So just finally then, we've talked a lot about where we might have first mover advantage and things like that. Is there anything that you'll be asking the Chancellor for South Cambridgeshire?
Well, we've got the Chancellor is spending a lot of money, or the government's spending a lot of money in my constituency, building a new railway line, which is the East-West Rail from Oxford to Cambridge. And that is welcome in that it takes, part of the objective is to take freight off the roads. So I think my one ask would be to make the railway line electric. But then it is a lot more expensive.
Brilliant. Well, Anthony Brown, thank you very much for your time, and hopefully we'll be able to have you on again soon.
Sam, thank you very much indeed. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Green Alliance podcast. Keep checking in as we will continue to bring you specialist interviews and highlights from our events here on the podcast feed. You can subscribe to the Green Alliance podcast on your favourite podcast app, and you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Green Alliance UK, or me at Sam Alvis 2. See you next time.